fall into big savings, all in the Kroger app.
Get packs of juicy red, green, black, or tri-color variety seedless grapes for $3.99 each. Then get tender boneless chuck roast or steaks for $4.99 a pound, all with your card and a digital coupon. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Good morning and welcome to episode 112 of the Jaguars on SI Podcast. My name is Gus Logue, joined as always by my co-host John Shipley. John, today we're not really going to do a preview of the Bucs preseason week two game because not a lot of stars are going to play and we don't really expect anything exciting to happen.
You don't want to preview CJ Beathard versus Kyle Trask?
Not really, actually. I will if we need to, but it's not, yeah. Not the top of my list.
Can I say something before we start?
Sure.
My first superlative for training camp is worst pass I've seen all training camp, maybe in six training camps. Kyle Trask yesterday. It was an affront to God. Like, I saw it happen and I had to like register it. I wouldn't have thought about it. I was rattled. So, tough day for your boy.
We Gators fans don't really exactly claim them. I was actually talking to a group of like other fellow former Gators, and we were all like, yeah, like Trask was fun in college, especially like under Dan Mullen, because that offense was good and productive. And Trask honestly put up like Heisman like numbers. Not saying he should have won Heisman, but he put up some great numbers. But none of us were really expecting him to do anything in the league. And so I'm honestly impressed and happy for him that he's been in the league for this long. If he's able to make a career as like a backup, then good for him, but I was never expecting anything more than that.
Such a bizarre second-round pick. He reminds me of Christian Hackenberg, not in terms of style, but the Jets took Hackenberg in the second, and he never played an NFL down.
The process kind of makes sense where like he was clearly like the backup to Tom Brady during their Super Bowl run, and then I think the hope was that Trask would be just like the quarterback of the future, even if he wasn't anything close to Tom Brady.
Yeah. Was that pesky... There's that pesky film and talent thing. I got him out of the way.
All right. He's like, we've been seeing a weak arm in camp and Mac Jones, but like Mac can at least like fire a bullet that's like 10 yards away. He just doesn't have the arm to like rip honey hole shots like 30 yards downfield. But Trask is like, the way Song described it to me, which was so good, is that it could be going through a school zone, his throws. Like they're just like in molasses going in slow motion. It's pretty
exciting. He's not even accurate. He's not even accurate. Second superlative. Before we really started, tweet that made me audibly laugh the hardest goes to you for yesterday. Mac Jones takes more sacks than 7.7. It's been like double digit, right? Like it's been like all
he does, right? Like it's like actually wild how many sacks he takes and like how many times the whistle blows dead. And then like because like part of the reason I tweeted is that like it doesn't really seem like it's a bad thing because then he'll like just throw past the running back anyway, or he'll just like start doing like a little dancey scramble and then it'll like look fun, but it's actually not good, folks. And like you can definitely see results in 11-on-11. Like he definitely takes the most sacks in that circumstance too.
I haven't seen anything that should tell me they should be terrified if Lawrence gets hurt. All right. We should touch on last Saturday against the Chiefs a bit since the starters did play. There were some even like immediate backups who made some big plays, stuff going on. So, of my biggest takeaways, I thought the Jags, and we'll get into this later when we talk about the short practices, but it seems like Heath Farwell is pretty ahead of the eight ball on the kick return stuff, right? I mean, Parker Washington had his incredible return. I think Bigsby honestly might have scored a touchdown if he didn't, you know, get tripped up by Tank Bigsby. It, blocking was really good. And then on the other end, it seems like their coverage was good. And Heath Farwell evidently knew something that Andy Reid doesn't about that safety. Andy Reid said after the game, he was like, yeah, they'll look at it and they'll figure it out. Like, figure out it was a safety.
Yeah, that was the rule.
that was one of my biggest takeaways, that Heath Farwell has the Jaguars ready for this new rule.
Yeah, that's definitely a good one. I was like optimistic that the Jags were going to be good under these new kickoff rules because under Farwell, the Jags have had like good DVOA and good advanced metrics on special teams. And so I thought that if they were a little bit ahead of the curve, just like with the normal rules, then maybe they would be ahead of the curve with these new rules. But so it was partly just like where they ranked in advanced metrics in special teams that were already kind of ahead of the pack, but then also just like their commitments to special teams. Like we talk a lot about how the bottom of the roster like depends a lot on what you can contribute on special teams. I mean, that's true for, I guess, probably the rest of the NFL teams as well. But like you could really see the investments made this offseason too by drafting a kicker, which I was not a fan of at the time, but I mean, wow, Cam Little's kick in the preseason game. Like the 40 yarder looks like it could have been, I tweeted, it looked like it could have been good from 200 yards. Like
yeah.
Some people say, you know, the phrase, like when people are scouting quarterbacks, like the way that the ball leaves his hand is just different. That's what it felt like watching Cam Little's kick. It was like the way that the ball left his foot was different. It just shot out like a cannon. And so I'm already backtracking on my takes for that pick because Cam Little looks pretty impressive. And then obviously like, they made a big commitment to Jamal Agnew a couple of years ago, and then another big commitment to Devin Duvernay this offseason to be, I mean, part of the offense's plans as kind of a gadget guy, but
he's
mostly
a solid in camp.
He returner. Yeah, and Duvernay, like I think we noted this in the last podcast too. Duvernay has looked really good as like the fourth or fifth wide receiver, but he was certainly brought in to be like the main on special teams.
Like he's probably not as good as Agnew as a returner. He's not like significantly worse. Probably like a little like below. He is so much better as a receiver. It is actually crazy. Cam Little doesn't look like he has that kind of like strength when you look at him. It always surprises me, doesn't it? Like who is that? Aldrick Rosas, that giant like 250-pound kicker they had a couple years ago. He looked like he could boom ball. He was terrible. Cam Little, first time you look at him, and you're like, you know, how did Gus get in shoulder pads?
It's like a step beyond that, honestly. It's like not even how did Gus get here? How did Gus's little brother get in here?
And then you see him and he's booming kicks. That 60, what was it, 61 yard attempt? He had the distance for it. It carried left some, but he definitely had the distance for it. I thought Doug Peterson made a good point. He said he wanted him to kick a lot in that game to, you know, put him in some game situations because they're clearly going to need him. Yeah, I thought he was really impressive. In 10 years, we're going to be seeing legions of fans tweeting out your draft grade. And let the record state, I agree with you. I agreed with you. Chance, maybe he wouldn't have even gotten drafted. But once you find a kicker, it doesn't really matter.
It was almost like the Brenton Strange thing. Like, I'm not at all blaming the person who was drafted. It's just more about, like, the position and where it happened. But, like, Cam Little, the person and the professional athlete, has been – excellent so far. The only other thing I'd add is that like the powerful leg is important for kickoffs too, just because like all the like whenever like kickoff return specialists like Cordarrelle Patterson just had a video on NFL's account I think yesterday, and then Devin Duvernay was asked about it early in the offseason. The main reason they're excited about the new kickoff rule is not really for any of the format and like the way that teams are lining up. It's just they're excited because they're going to get more opportunities to return kicks, because that's kind of the point of the new rules. But like with Cam Little, I think like a lot of teams, including I expect the Jaguars or I suspect the Jaguars, are still planning on just booting kicks out of the end zone and letting teams get the ball at the 30-yard line. And so like I think that was an underrated thing of the Brandon McManus signing too, is that they wanted to use his big leg not just on field goal attempts but also utilize it on kickoffs. And so I think it's the same thing with Cam Little.
Riley couldn't kick kickoffs. They were other guys who are impressed. I thought Tank Bigsby ran like a bat out of hell. We'll talk about him more in a little bit when we talk about joint practices. It's, I don't know, man. Fool me once, shame on you. Fool me twice, you're not gonna fool me again.
It's been weird because he does objectively look good.
He looks great.
Yeah,
he looks great, dude. The burst, the power, the contact balance, he looks fantastic. I'm not gonna take any blame for people buying into it, because like just look at it and ask anybody. He looks fantastic. He looked great in the game. He had like one good run last season against the Dolphins, and then he fumbled on yard line later in the drive. He looks better in this game than I think he did at any point last preseason. Parker Washington, obviously, he only caught, I believe, one pass, but It was a really good adjustment against press coverage. He was on the outside instead of inside this time. It was a two-hand jam. The guy kind of put him like 2 yards on the line of scrimmage, but
Yeah, he.
he adjusted though, made a nice catch, and then really nifty move yards after the catch to get the first down. We'll talk about Parker more here in a bit, but it seems like he's locked in as like the number four receiver. I personally am not sure about him playing on the outside, especially against teams that play like the Kansas City Chiefs who are going to try to get hands on you. Maybe against like heavy off coverage teams, it would make sense some. But either way, it seems like he's a number four receiver. If something happens to somebody, he's going in. Trying to think of some other guys. I thought Miles Cole, obviously, he's going against the back offensive line. I thought he was further along than I thought he'd be.
For sure.
DJ Coleman and Travis Gibson. It was interesting to me. They rotated the entire front four on the first drive. So to me, it kind of showed who they think the top backups are. Travis Gibson and DJ Coleman swapped out for Walker and Hines Allen. Ledbetter went in for Hamilton, and Mason Smith went in for Roy Robson Harris. I've even seen Mason Smith take some first team defense reps in the last week or so. So obviously Arik Armstead's a starting three technique, but it wouldn't surprise me to see Mason Smith and Robson Harris's snap counts be, roughly equal this year.
Yeah, we'll get to Brian Thomas in a bit, but I feel like he and Mason Smith are two of the biggest risers throughout training camp. Like Parker Washington and Tank Bigsby have like really looked like one of the most improved players the entire offseason, but like just in the last month or so, I think two of the biggest risers are their first two picks in the draft out of LSU.
For sure. So there were plenty of positives to talk about. Was there anything during the Chiefs game? And granted, starting offense was out there for two drives. Starting defense was missing several key guys, Tyson, Darnell, Arik Armstead. Was there anything that concerned you, like with the starting units during the game?
No, I want to talk about Trevor Lawrence. Can I talk about Trevor Lawrence? Because
Trevor Lawrence week.
it's always a Trevor Lawrence week, baby. Come on. That he had five dropbacks, and I think he was like 3 for 4. The only incompletion was like Gabe Davis barely didn't get his feet in bounds, and he threw for a touchdown. But his one dropback that did not result in a pass attempt was a sack that he took on 4th and 5 or 4th and 6 or whatever. But I think, like, I'm the Trevor apologist. I'm here to say it wasn't his fault. And like, first of all, it's preseason, so if he takes a sack, like, it's really not that big of a deal, and it's probably not even worth the time going over this. But the reason I think that it's like okay in that circumstance is that he was clearly looking for Brian Thomas, and he was clearly just like wanting to get the young guy a target to kind of like boost his confidence. And we've seen this week like the result of how much confidence from a catch that he ended up catching from CJ Beathard has really done for his confidence in the on the field this week. And so if Trevor was like looking at any other player except for Brian Thomas and like held on to the ball for too long and took the sack, then I'd be like, okay, it's fair for fans to be upset. Like that was, even if it is preseason, that was objectively a bad decision. But because he was looking for Brian Thomas, I think that was like honestly just like leadership displayed on the field right there, just trying to boost the confidence of a young guy. And it was like, I'm confident in saying that like if it was anyone else, like then we would have a problem. But like it was like such a simple read. Like I do this in Madden, like where if I see like my fast guy on the perimeter is like there's press coverage against him, then I'm like, okay, if it's single high, I'm throwing to him no matter what. And so that's what Trevor was doing. Like Brian Thomas beat press off the line of scrimmage immediately. So Trevor saw that and was like, okay, if this safety drops down, then I got it. And I'm chucking it deep to Brian Thomas. And then the safety just like always stayed up high. And so Trevor should have made like the correct read, which he's made dozens, if not hundreds of times in his career so far, to throw the corner to Christian Kirk. But instead, he was just staying on Brian Thomas for a little bit too long. And so I certainly would not expect that mistake to repeat in the regular season. And again, I think it was just like Trevor being a good leader trying to get his young guy a target. And so I'm not at all worried about it. And I wanted to just go over that play in case people were still freaking out about a preseason sack.
Yeah, I've never seen a preseason sack dissected so much. He got questions after the game about it.
Yeah.
It's like, okay, so I tweeted Trevor sacked Evan Ingram open. I was just saying what happened. I'm not saying you should care about this. I'm just like saying like Evan Ingram was basically about as open as you can get. It was a really good route combination. for like a man coverage beater. You know, in a game, I agree with you. I think Lawrence finds Ingram there, and he probably takes that like 30, 40 yards after the catch. I agree with you entirely. I do not understand why people care so damn much about that one sack. I thought Trevor looked good. And like you said, the only two drawbacks he didn't complete were the sack and then Gabe Davis out of bounds. I was getting a little triggered by people telling me he was in bounds. I could see right here he wasn't. But I thought overall it was a good outing for him. I'd say the one thing that I thought was concerning, and running game a lot of times is like a war of attrition. You need more than 5 or 6 carries to get going and find some momentum. But the lack of running room and the lack of push up front is very similar to not only what we saw last year, but what we've seen throughout all of training camp, in my opinion. In my opinion, like last year's training camp, they were consistently getting stuffed by their own defense. I went into the year thinking, wow, they're not gonna be able to run the ball at all. It's more like, do you disagree? Like, it's more or less what I've seen this training camp.
No, I do not disagree. I mean,
Yeah.
you were saying that people are going to come after me for my Cam Little draft grade, but the Ezra Cleveland X Factor bit is not aging well at all. He is like kind of been trying to play through injury, but has not been looking good at all. And then Mitch Morse has been like maybe the most like underwhelming new addition to the team so far, honestly, because he's like, I mean, he's getting up there in age a little bit, and maybe he just needs to kind of like get into a little bit of a rhythm, and maybe he'll be like, he is a good vet, so maybe he'll be fine the regular season, but like the center position hasn't been as like really consistent as you would want it to be.
This is pure speculation on my end. Nothing sourced on this, but I don't know. Maybe he's just one of those veterans who's kind of like, let's get to the end of let's get to the hell of end of this camp. But and the other copium people used was, well, two offensive starters were missing. Yes and no. Anton Harrison was out of the game. He was objectively one of their worst run blockers last year. Walker Little was in that right tackle. So Jaguars fans need to make up their mind. Either you think Walker Little's a starting quality right tackle, left offensive tackle, or he's not. It's not like they were putting Cole Van Lannen in there. And then at left guard, yeah, Ezra wasn't in there. Blake Kantz was in there. But am I supposed to believe that the difference between Blake Kantz and Ezra Cleveland is major enough to pass or fail the Jaguars run blocking? It's not. Objectively, Ezra Cleveland is probably going to be offensive lineman number 5 this year, right? Like just in terms of who their best offensive linemen are. And I'm not saying I feel vindicated yet. I'm getting there. But he definitely needs to, I think, get healthy. Like, that's kind of been the book on him since he got to Jacksonville, in my opinion. Like, he's basically been banged up the entire time. And when he hasn't been banged up, and this is just my opinion, I don't really think they've gotten, great results. But we'll see. I if I were the Jaguars, I'd be concerned about running the ball again. I know people are using the ultimate copium. Two starters are out. It was only 5 snaps, et cetera, et cetera. I'm basing this off of, almost 20 training camp practices as well. And from what I've seen over the years, it normally carries over. You can only tell during training camp if a team's going to be able to run the ball or not. So, Gus, was there anything else from preseason game that we're missing? I don't want to get too deep into the weeds about like third stringers and stuff. Christian Braswell's effort play was fantastic. That's the kind of play that like coaches show the team over and over. He's definitely making the roster. I don't think what else. No, nothing else really popped out to me. It was interesting that Buster Brown got the start at corner with Tyson out instead of Jarian Jones. I did a 53-man roster projection after the preseason game, and I had Buster in it, because that seems like Buster is in a pretty good place right now. Other than that, I really don't have anything that much to talk of. They got decent pressure on Mahomes on the first drive. Mahomes kind of diced them up a bit, but it felt like it was just like Mahomes being Mahomes. It didn't feel like it was the
Yeah,
Jaguars
especially
defense doing it.
first drive Mahomes. Like Doug Peterson has said multiple times, like in the preseason, kind of like, oh, like we're not really scheming things up, and maybe they schemed things up a teeny tiny bit for preseason game, but I don't know. Like Andy Reid is one of those people that like always puts together a good opening script, and so like I'm almost like expecting Mahomes to get into the red zone every single first drive, and so the fact that they were able to kind of like stall the Chiefs out and just prevent them from scoring a touchdown, force them to take a field goal. Travis Gibson like almost single-handedly did it. He had like A tackle at the line of scrimmage on a run play, and then he tackled Travis Kelce about like 5 yards downfield, and then he had a quarterback pressure to force an incompletion. And so it was good to see like Jacksonville's edge depth step up. I feel like that was kind of the biggest takeaway between Gibson with like the starting unit or like the first couple series, but then also guys like Miles Cole and DJ Coleman really stepping up. I got go ahead.
It was good to see an even front from Jacksonville again. Yeah, as the great Bo Jackson has said, it is in the Jaguars' DNA. Like, they're just not a 3-4 franchise.
Okay, I like that
Just
take. I was gonna drop an offensive line take for you, like interior offensive lineman round 2, 2025 NFL draft. What do you think?
I could see it. I think they're going to take a tackle round one.
Yeah.
They're going to take a tackle or a safety. I don't think Cam Robinson or Walker Little's coming back. Anton, this is my way too early prediction. I think they move Anton to left tackle, draft a left tackle in the first round. And then you might have to replace like Sheriff and Morris next offseason too. Like
That's what I'm saying.
just based on age. Wow. They
Then my
yeah.
second, I this is more of a question, I guess, but for the offensive line, which week do we see Cooper Hodges make his first appearance this season? Because I feel like there's been kind of whispers like that. I mean, the Jags, I think, originally want him to be the successment plan successor to Brandon Sheriff at right guard, but then Cooper Hodges had a season ending injury like last year before the regular season began. And so then they ended up extending or restructuring Sheriff. But I think Cooper Hodges is kind of like their first man on deck on the interior, even at center, maybe, because like he's been getting like trying out center during training camp and practicing snapping. And so I just feel like he's going to be like the next man up in the interior. So I was curious if you think we're going to see a change at any point, but only due to injury.
Not unless Brandon Sheriff gets hurt. I haven't. Cooper took like some snaps with center during OTAs and stuff. I haven't seen him do like anywhere else but right guard and training camp. I haven't seen him at left guard. I haven't seen him at center. I think the Jaguars have just basically made their bed. I don't think any jobs are really up along the starting offensive line. I think the Jaguars will roll with their guards unless somebody gets hurt. But based on both the history of Brandon Sheriff and Ezra Cleveland, there's a chance that we're gonna miss tonight. Brandon Sheriff's been really, I don't know if durable is the right word because he's been banged up in Jacksonville, but he hasn't missed time. You know, like he's fought through it. So maybe there's a chance he plays in that regard. But like somebody asked me the other day, they were like, can they put Cooper on the offensive line? Can they, put Walker Little at guard? Like, what would you do if you were the Jaguars to change things right now? And I would say invest in a time machine. Go back to March and revisit your plan at guard. That's the only thing they can do. They've made their bet. There is no help coming. Reinforcements are not coming. Teams are not going to be cutting starting level guards at the end of the preseason. They made their bet. It is what it is.
Opium online is pretty hilarious. I saw one account being like, okay, let's go Cam left tackle, Walker Little left guard, Moore center. Let's go Cooper Hodges right guard, and Anton right tackle. It's like, at
Why?
which point he's not going to do
Why do
it?
people want Walker Little to play guard?
I don't know.
It was very clear last year he's not a guard. He is a good offensive tackle. That's it. And the get your best five on the field thing makes no sense to me when your best five consists of three guys who can only play offensive tackle. And Cam Robinson's not going to play guard. I had
Yeah, no. That's
somebody
fair.
asked me, they were like, do you think Cam Robinson would move to left guard for a pay bump? What? Cam Robinson's never going to play guard in his life. All right. Yeah, I know. This offensive line
Makes
has
no
people.
sense, man.
This offensive line has people freaking out,
No,
man. Freaking out.
it is funny. There was someone made a really good graphic of like, like when there was like the Jamar Chase versus Penei Sewell debate of like who the Bengals should
I
draft, and like
saw
they
it.
were making
I saw it.
the graphic of like, oh, if you draft Sewell, then you're gonna get sacked before you can complete the pass to Jamar Chase. So someone made a funny one of the Jags offensive line like all crumbling so that Trevor gets sacked, and Brian Thomas Jr. is just standing there with his hands up. That one was funny.
Ford was watching.
Yeah, the I like people are definitely excited about Parker Washington, Tank Bigsby, and Brian Thomas, and pretty much every other position, but the offensive line, especially the interior, but really just the whole offensive line is, I think, at this point, easily the biggest worry for the team.
So I think we can go ahead and jump right over to joint practices takeaways from that. Because so I watched the offense on Wednesday and the defense on Thursday. I caught a couple plays of the offense yesterday because like we were coming my direction, so I could see like out of the corner. My big takeaways on Wednesday were if the NFL was 7-on-7, I'd pick the Jags to go to the Super Bowl. They look like a
For
great seven. They look like a great 7-on-7 team. And then
are
once
you
you
saying
put
like if they had their offense and their defense?
just on Wednesday watching their offense,
Okay.
they're a 7-on-7 offense right now. They once you put a defense in front of them, it looks so much different than it does when they're going, just against the secondary and linebackers and stuff. The Jaguars completely iced Tampa Bay's defense in like red zone 7-on-7 shows. I think Trevor was like 4 of 6 for three touchdowns and one of his incompletions. Like he threw it to ETN in the corner of the end zone, like bounced off his shoulder pad. So he was freaking fantastic. And then you go to team drills and he's still making really good throws. I think he had one overthrow of Brian Thomas Jr. It was the first time I realized you could overthrow Brian Thomas Jr. Obviously, the next time he hit him deep, perfect pass. I thought he had a great practice. But once you get the team drills, I had him in my notes sacked 6 different times. And that was corner safety blitzes off the edge that they didn't pick up. Vita Vea dominating. Chris Braswell, who I'm really upset there's a Chris Braswell and a Christian Braswell. It's really been messing with me. Chris Braswell got 2 sacks. And I thought the offensive tackles played well, specifically Anton Harrison. I thought Anton was completely shutting down the Bucs and like pass pro. But Trevor Lawrence was getting guys in his face pretty much every single play. And I know it's a Todd Bowles defense. He's going to throw blitzes at you and everything like that. But the offensive line, just the protection didn't look ready for him. And like that Brian Thomas long touchdown on Wednesday, everybody got excited for. He should be excited. First round pick. He's showing great ability. But Israel was rolling around on the ground like he was on fire and he was trying to put it out. And at least 2 guys would have gotten a sack on Trevor on that play. So that was my big takeaway from Wednesday was like the skill guys in Trevor looked fantastic. The pass pro, I don't know. And then I thought the run blocking was worse. I had ETN. I'm not sure how many overall carries he had. I had him stuffed, and that's 2 yards or fewer, 7 times. That's crazy. And the
I was just gonna say when we were talking about Tank earlier, I was thinking that Tank is like almost looked more impressive than ETN during training camp, but I don't think it's like to any fault of ETN. Like I think ETN is in for an incredible season, but like he just like hasn't had anywhere to go really. That's the thing.
I think he's in for the season from hell. Like he's still going to produce, but I think he's going to absolutely hate the season. Like he's going to have to fight his ass off to get a yard. Tank Bigsby, to your point, he would come in with the second team offense, and he was breaking off long run after long run. He even though it was thud, he chucked a corner one run. There were no fights, but I thought that was going to maybe start one. But dude just got up. He had two touchdowns from the 2-yard line. In red zone drills. She had a 10.
Fall into big savings, all in the Kroger app. Get packs of juicy red, green, black, or tri-color variety seedless grapes for $3.99 each. Then get tender boneless chuck roast or steaks for $4.99 a pound, all with your card and a digital coupon. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Yard touchdown in red zone drills with the first team offensive line. He was basically the only running back getting any yardage with the first or second team offensive line. And then when they were doing third downs, there was like a 3rd and 1. ETN had stuffed previously, and then Tank came in. He was able to get 3 or 4 yards to get the first down. Like I said, I don't think it's an ETN or Tank thing. I think they're just two different style guys. Obviously, one gets downhill in a hurry, one is more of a space guy. And
Underlining.
it just looked like rough sledding, man. And I get it. Vita Vea is an absolute freak. But look at the Jaguar schedule, go week to week, and tell me how many teams they are playing that don't have freaks up front. It's the NFL. Like, no other team has a Vita Vea, but they're going to be playing some pretty freaking good defensive tackles this year. And I thought, take all the early training camp practices into context, take the Chiefs game, and then take this week into context. I think they're going to struggle running the ball again.
All right. Yeah, I think that's a fair take. I mean, especially when you like I was already thinking it, but then when you point out just how it's like happened in every single like occurrence that we've watched over the past 4 months, like every different situation or different environment that we've seen the run game in, like there's not really been anything that's promising. Like the I feel like the copium that I have is like what we were saying about Morse earlier, where it's like he's just trying to get through training camp, and then maybe once the regular season comes, he'll kind of like turn it on and be the steady veteran that everyone was hoping for when that signing happened. But yeah, like that needs to happen, and Cleveland needs to like take some kind of like energy pill or health pill where like he's not injured anymore and is actually able to be 100% out there.
The Jaguars on SI podcast is not endorsed taking pills to avoid injury, for the record.
But good asterisk, good asterisk.
That is Gus Logue.
Yeah, well, that's fair. But to move on to happier things, I think the deployment of the wide receivers has been really encouraging. The past couple years has like not been great, just because I think part of the issue with Jacksonville's passing offense is that they haven't had adequate spacing, mostly just because they haven't had like a deep threat. Like they would try to pigeonhole like 30-plus-year-old Marvin Jones or comeback player Calvin Ridley into these like vertical roles, like the DeSean Jackson, Brian Thomas role, and like those guys can like definitely like win deep and like catch deep passes, but they're not like meant to be just like outside burners the way that Brian Thomas is. And so like we've already seen, like as I mentioned earlier, his confidence has gone up a ton just after that catch against Kansas City, and then I think after that catch on Wednesday, the long touchdown. But what's been cool is that I think his confidence has certainly improved, but it's been cool to see is like how much defenses are forced to respect him. And I think that's really the way he's been able to like separate more consistently on like the intermediate routes, like the outbreakers and the digs and stuff like that, is that like since he's already burned Tampa Bay's secondary several times, like they literally have to line up a few yards deeper. And so then that just like makes the route easier for Brian Thomas whenever he's actually going to like cut it off 15 or 20 yards
Sure.
downfield. And so it's going to be the same way for the rest of the offense. I was kind of like the theory that I had, even though I thought like it was almost going to be like Cincinnati, where like they had T. Higgins and Ja'Marr Chase, like that had the ability to run go routes every play. I thought it might be like that with Gabe and Brian. But Gabe, as we, I think pretty, I'm pretty sure we just said on the last podcast, is like the middle of the field, the mofo, whatever you want to call it. He's going to be used over the middle a lot and is going to be more of like that kind of mid-range Mamba. And then Brian Thomas is going to be the deep threat. But I think they also like, even though there's a specific role for these guys now, I think the Jags want them to be interchangeable. Like you hear about how like NFL wide receiver rooms want to be like an NBA starting five, where like they can have different roles and different body types doing different things. But like the NBA has gone into like a quote unquote positionless sport in recent years, where like they have guys being able to switch different positions at any time in order to like defend any position mostly. And so I think you're kind of seeing that with wide receiver rooms too. Like I think the Jags know that Parker Washington isn't great outside, but they just want him to have that ability to win
For sure.
outside so that they can have that like positionlessness and like move Brian Thomas into the slot and move Evan Engram out wide and like have all of these different interchangeable like pass catching options. And that'll make it so much harder for the defense. I feel like that's one thing that Kyle Shanahan has mastered, because like you have Kyle Juszczyk in there, and so like it's 21 personnel, so you bring a bigger body, but then all of a sudden Juszczyk is like lined up outside. And so Kyle Shanahan does a really good job of like just like using different interchangeable parts. And so I feel like the Jags are kind of like on their way there, even if it's pretty obvious at this point that like Kirk is underneath, Gabe is over the middle, and Brian is deep.
No, I think that's a great point. I think you saw a little bit yesterday with Brian Thomas's big grab 7-on-7. You know, it was a vertical route out of the slot. That kind of speed, it's going to be tough to cover him deep out of the slot. I think you made a great point. It makes me happy every time ETN catches a pass lately, or Gabe Davis catches a pass over the middle of the field. We both get added. Like, you just look at Gabe Davis's athletic profile coming out of UCF. And I know I mentioned this last time, but this role just makes more sense for me, in my opinion, than what he did in Buffalo. And of course, he made big plays in Buffalo. He made it work. But I just feel like this is a better role for him. And it's kind of a Zay Jones role, you know, middle of the field, out breaking routes. And I think he's significantly better than Zay Jones.
I think he's better than Zay Jones. I think Zay Jones was
I think
fine
he's
wide receiver for
he's significantly better than Zay Jones.
him. Okay. We'll see.
You agree or disagree? I was always kind of on the, I don't know, I think Zay Jones is kind of mid camp.
I think Zay was like certainly like overpaid based on like the dollar amount that was in his contract, but like the Jags were obviously that's kind of their strategy to bring in just like professional football players to the organization. Like again, I think he's a fine like number three or number four. I think Davis will be better, but like I feel like it's almost a similar story where I think Zay Jones is kind of pigeonholed into like deep vertical role in Las Vegas, especially after Henry Ruggs was no longer with the team, and then the Jags kind of like saw how the Raiders mismanaged him and were like, oh, he's going to be more productive and more efficient in like an intermediate role that we have planned for him. And then they're doing the same thing with Gabe. And so even if they kind of like didn't do Calvin Ridley any favors, I think they do have like a good vision for Gabe Davis, so the way that they had for Zay Jones. And so I think Davis will be more productive and more better. But I don't know. I don't think Davis is going to like turn in like a 1200 yard season.
I don't either. I don't either. I'm just trying to get my point across. I do not think Zay Jones is very good.
Okay.
He
We'll see.
was one of the most Jaguars receivers of all time. I'll give him that.
I'll agree with you there.
He was certainly one of them. All right. The star, right? Is this definitely Brian Thomas, right? Like Tampa Bay has heaped praise on him. Todd Bowles had positive things to say about him. Sarah Walsh of NFL Network said she talked to Zion McCollum, who apparently is starting for Tampa Bay. I think that's maybe a little concerning for them. But and she asked him who stood out to him, and he said Brian Thomas, which makes sense. He beat him for a touchdown and beat him on the long ball after Wednesday's practice. And then yesterday, you know, I think you had the tweet, you were watching the offense, and he was doing more than just a long ball. And then obviously he had that giant catch from Trevor Lawrence. The Brian Thomas Jr. from, in my opinion, it goes back to when he caught that touchdown pass against Ronald Darby in practice a week or so ago. You remember which one I'm talking about, where he was kind of like bobbling and caught it? Since then, he has turned it on, in my opinion. And a lot of it has been vertically based routes. He's obviously gotten better in other areas, but his role year one is to stretch the field. He's going to do that, right? Tampa Bay has didn't have anybody on their defense who could keep up with him. And Zion McCollum runs a 4.33. He's not a good cornerback, but he's one of the craziest athletes at the position in the NFL right now. And Thomas is just running by him. And it almost looks like he's not as fast as he is, but he's still getting on these dudes in a hurry because like he's so big, it doesn't look like he's that dude who's just like accelerating 100 miles per hour. But I think him and Trevor are definitely getting on the same page. I think his confidence is obviously on another level than it was during the first couple of weeks. So I'm not changing my projection on his role. I still think he's going to be fourth in targets. I still think Kirk and Ingram and Davis will get more targets, but his targets will probably be the most valuable on the team, and his targets are going to be the ones that can literally tilt the game. And we said it when he was drafted, and I feel that way even more now. Trevor Lawrence has never had a receiver like Brian Thomas. The only one with speed similar to him was DJ Chark, and one, he played with Chark for like four games, and two, Brian Thomas, in my opinion, has much better ball skills than DJ Chark. That was Chark's issue. He was a great like speed guy getting downfield, but he wasn't very good at adjusting to the ball, things like that. I think Thomas Jr. is like on another level from that. So I think Thomas Jr. is a receiver. I can't remember the last period in defense they had like him, like Allen Robinson, but he was different because he was more of a contested catch guy than like a pure like burn you guy. I really can't remember the last guy they've had like Thomas, who I believe can walk in week one and legitimately scare defenses.
I'm really interested to see now what Brian Thomas is able to do in the red zone, because I think we're pretty comfortable in like how effective he'll be, like just like when the Jags have the full field at their disposal. But then when it gets into the red zone and the field is squeezed and like his speed is a little bit less valuable, I'm interested to see like if he's still able to separate. He actually did have a really good red zone rep on Wednesday. Again, I don't know who, I think it was against McCollum, but it
That
was. Yeah, it was in the red zone, and like Brian Thomas was lined out wide and just kind of like gave a little shimmy, and then at the goal line he broke out to the pylon and caught a touchdown. And so that was really encouraging to see, where like even if his like vertical speed isn't able to be utilized in the red zone, like he's still able to kind of like use as just athleticism to get open and get a touchdown. And so, like, as long as he's able to continue doing that sort of thing and utilize like his overall receiver skill set down there where the field is shortened, and isn't like a complete zero when like he can't just like sprint 30 yards, then I feel like that'll be like the true way to determine if like his rookie season is kind of a
For
win,
sure.
or just maybe not to like judge his rookie season, but just kind of like to judge his development, I guess, because like he's already like going to be effective as a field stretcher. And now the question is like, how much more of a ceiling does this first round pick have?
No, 100%. 'Cause he definitely has the skill set to be more than that. It's
Right.
just, it's clear you had to unlock that part of his game. LSU didn't ask him to be any more of that. So he has to catch up with how different coverages, how different the routes are, the speed and physicality of the game. So, but I thought it was a fantastic week for Brian Thomas Jr. Other guys on offense that stood out to me, Parker Washington, Christian Kirk has the mild calf injury. We didn't hear anything about for 24 hours. So Parker Washington got a ton of reps. I thought he looked like they couldn't really cover him, honestly. Like he seemed like he was wide open every time he got the ball. Defensively, did you catch much of the defense this week? Or were you mostly eyes glued
No,
to the offense?
I was really like, I feel like Mike Evans versus Tyson Campbell was the thing I was most looking forward to. But then
I
I
didn't
was like,
see it yesterday.
no, I just like wasn't thinking about how they were going to split the fields. But then I ended up spending the majority of my time watching Jags offense. So.
Okay, so I watched the defense yesterday. Andre Sisco had a really impressive play in the red zone. So like he got the pick because Sean Tucker like bobbled it and ended up in his hands. But the fact he was even in that position to begin with, because like they came out with trips, Andre Sisco shouted out the orders to the defense, got everybody lined up, and then fought through a pick route to even get in position to be right on Tucker's, hip. It was fantastic play. I thought Christian Braswell made some nice plays. Tyson Campbell looked like Tyson Campbell. I didn't see many reps against Mike Evans, but he was mostly shut down. Eric Hallett, two interceptions, one off the worst pass I've seen from training camp this year, but it was a good reaction by him because there's no way he could have thought the ball was going to him. And then the other one was Devin Lloyd tipped a pass, a Trask pass at the line of scrimmage, and Hallett got it. Buster Brown did get beat for one touchdown by Trey Palmer. But he would have had a pick six against Baker a few plays later. He dropped the interception, but it was a really good, coverage, reading the quarterback. It didn't seem like Baker saw him at all. He just stepped in front of the pass. And it kind of reminded me of, there's no reason you should remember this, but there was a play in against the Colts in week six last year where Gardner threw it right to Buster and Buster just dropped it. It looked a lot like that one. So, trying to think who else. The Bucs did have some success. They beat up, I feel like, a little bit on the Jaguars linebackers in the red zone. Jarian Jones had an up and down day. He got beat for one touchdown, broke up two more pa broke up another pass though, and then deflected another. They didn't have pads on, so no one-on-one drills or anything like that. But I thought Josh Hines-Allen and Trayvon Walker both set really good edges against a really good like offensive tackle duo. Like I saw Hines-Allen like there's a wharf to the ground on one play, and he's a freaking mammoth. So I think those two are obviously ready to go, ready to play. Otherwise, Tampa Bay, I probably would say it was about even on Wednesday. I mean, on Thursday, it seems like most people say the Jaguars defense beat up on Tampa Bay on Wednesday. Like Rick Stroud, who is like the beat writer for Tampa Bay, basically said on Wednesday the Jaguars beat the hell out of Tampa Bay on both sides of the ball. So I think you're coming out of this week thinking the Jaguars are further ahead than Tampa Bay. Like when I look at their talent on the field, Tampa Bay probably has the three of the four best players. Hell, four of the five, I think. Mike Evans, Antoine Winfield, Tristan Wirfs, and Vita Vea. They have really good like blue chip guys that the Jaguars, they have a couple like Josh Hines-Allen, I think, is their lone probably true blue chip guy right now. They have a couple guys who are blue chip adjacent, but I'd say if you're looking at the top five players from both teams, Tampa Bay has four. But you look at the whole picture, I thought Jacksonville had significantly better depth. I thought Jacksonville, like I said, I thought their secondary looked much better than Tampa Bay's. I think Jacksonville's overall receivers looked a bit more dangerous. Like Jalen McMillan made some plays. I wasn't that impressed by Trey Palmer or some of the tight ends. Baker Mayfield looked like just kind of a guy to me. So I feel like the only real advantage Tampa Bay had over Jacksonville was Tampa Bay's front seven against Jacksonville's offensive line. Otherwise, I came out of the joint practice thinking the Jaguars are a bit better than Tampa Bay.
Yeah, I feel like we got Bonkiball. We got to give a little credit to Trent because like he had two really big off seasons of like just signing a bunch of free agents in 2021 and 2022, and it's like, all right, you like overpaid a handful of players to just like improve your starters basically, but you still need to like build up the depth, like especially for a team that picked first overall in back-to-back years, like that was going to be crucial to go from like a playoff contender to a Super Bowl contender, and that's kind of like the harder thing to do rather than just going like from first overall pick team to a playoff contender. But the depth I feel like has really improved. Like, I mean, we've talked about the offensive line. There's concerns there, but like cornerback and edge, I feel like we were talking the beginning of last season about how worried we were about the depth of those two important defensive positions. And now, like, I'm way less worried about both of those. And then same for wide receiver, like Parker Washington has stepped up. Devin Duvernay looks like a better wide out than Jamal Agnew. Like Elijah Cooks, I feel like is a player that looks a lot better than he did last offseason too. And so like credits to Trent for bringing in like kind of like building more depth, but also to Doug for like, because I feel like Doug was kind of challenged early in the offseason, like after the season end last season ended the way that it did. It was like I almost feel like Trent was probably like, well, like I brought in a lot of new people, but like they just haven't done anything. And so we need to actually like develop them and have them like actually see the field, especially as it related to Brenton Strange and Tank Bigsby. But I feel like there's actually been a lot of development. And obviously, like Ryan Nielsen and his staff get a lot of credit for that too. But I feel like the direction of the Jags, bar the offensive line, is like going in a good direction. So that's been promising.
Yeah, I agree with you. Thus, any other big takeaways from joint practices?
Well, not really from joint practices, but one thing I wanted to run by you is like all of the safety moves that the Jags have made because Andrew Wingard sustained a knee injury a week or two ago. Might have been 3 weeks ago at this point. And so he's gonna expected to miss like the first few weeks of the season. And so the Jags had already signed veteran safety Terrell Edmunds, who had a really big play, a couple really big plays in the preseason game.
PFF had him as the top graded safety in the first week.
Yeah, I think it's just because like he probably had a couple like turnover worthy plays, and that might have like shot him up in the rankings or something like that. But he certainly had a good game. And then after the Wingard injury, the Jags signed Adrian Amos and Tashawn Gibson Sr. And so like it seems pretty obvious that they're just like trying to bolster the safety room's depth with the Wingard injury. But I have two theories that I want to run by you. The first is that do you think that like any of those veterans would be like have the expectation that they might be special teamers? Because I'm just wondering if like with these new kickoff rules, if the Jags are looking for like a certain body type for the new kickoff, and that body type happens to be safety. But I figure that one probably isn't true because like I don't know if you're like veteran
Maybe
such
Ed,
as Gibson doing that.
M maybe Edmonds. I don't. I'm not sure if Amos and Gibson are at that stage in their career where they can be solid contributors on special teams. I can see Edmonds doing it though.
So then my other theory is that maybe the Jags are planning on running more three safety sets than we expect, which I feel like I might have touched on this at one point just in the deep offseason when we were trying to think of things to say about Ryan Nielsen's defense. But I think Atlanta last year was one of a handful of teams. Like I think the Cardinals and the Giants and the Patriots and the Titans. I think those teams also ran like three safety sets and not three safeties as in like we're going to have a third safety, like basically being like a nickel player or a linebacker player, like a big dime look or something like that. But three safeties is in like three safeties, like back deep, or three safeties, like really patrolling like deep zones, almost the way that you see like Iowa State or other college teams run it. And so, like, do you think that, like, I don't know, because like even with the Wingard injury in mind, it seems like they've been very active in terms of like the bottom of the safety room, which is why I've been like cooking up these theories. They're more theories than takes, but do you think that we're actually just going to see like more playing time for more safeties than I expected, or are they just really doing their due diligence with the position?
I'm really not sure, honestly. Like, part of it, obviously, due to injuries, like, they need more bodies in that room. I don't feel like it's an indictment on Antonio Johnson. Like, I'm not seeing him lose starter reps in practice or anything like that, but he's definitely the most unproven guy, probably on the whole defense, on that starting unit. I'm really not like there's, I think what you said makes sense. There's been a lot of different theories. A lot of different people have had thoughts on why they're adding so many safeties. And we might not honestly see why until the 53-man roster comes out. I mean, Gibson's an interesting situation. So he's going to miss the first six games due to, the suspension. So they would have to make him make the 53-man roster, and then he would become a non-active member of it. So they'd have to cut somebody for him to basically sit for 6 weeks. I don't know if you sign a guy who's suspended for 6 weeks without the intentions of him eventually playing some kind of role. He's one of the more experienced safeties in the NFL. I think he has nearly, if not over, 200 games of experience. So I really don't know what the
I
deal is
guess
in
my
safety.
last thing would just like to try to get a veteran presence in that room because, like you
Yeah.
said, like Johnson is like one of the more experienced players on the team, especially one of the least experienced starters on the team. And then even Cisco, like I think everyone in Jacksonville like is expecting a good season from Cisco, and he's definitely an ascending player, but he also like is relatively inexperienced because he was like knocked up with injuries last year, and then he barely played as a rookie under Urban Meyer. And so I wonder if they're just like, yeah, we're just going to try to get like some player coaches into this room to just help out these young guys. Maybe that's it.
You know, I tell this story all the time. It's one of my favorites. Somebody had asked one time, like with the team, like, "What do you guys keep asking Urban about Cisco?" In my head, I'm like, "What are you talking about? Like, what do you think?
Yeah, because he should
It, is he really that confused why he keeps getting questions on why his third round pick isn't playing?
play.
Worst team in the NFL. That's where he's getting questions."
Not even
All
as
right.
bad as not giving Trevor Lawrence first team reps, though. Like, what are we doing?
A weird Gardner Minshew, Darth Minshew. I should block him. I should block him. He still tweets at
He's
me
still
about that.
really?
He's still at it. He's still at it.
That's
What a sick individual. All right.
Yeah.
Yes. You got anything else? We'll obviously be back next week to talk about whatever we see on Saturday and the saddest, loneliest week 2 preseason game. But there's gonna be we'll look ahead at the 53-man roster. And like I was telling Gus before we recorded, like, training camp's for all intent and purposes over. Doug Peterson's already said next week it's going to be more like regular season practice like setting. So training camp's basically over at this point. So we'll come back with some different takes probably around the same time next week. Gus, you got anything else, my friend?
Yeah, I feel like there's a one weekend like in between the preseason and the regular season. So I feel like, or like at some point in that stretch, we should hand out some like just NFL wide predictions, like who's going to win MVP, who's going to win the AFC South, a couple like just like a bunch of overarching predictions. But one that I want to hand out now, go ahead. Are you going to say something?
Nick Sirianni fired.
That's a good one. I like that one.
Washington Commanders top 3 pick.
Top three and not three or two. All right,
Yeah.
we'll save the rest of them. But one that I wanted to hand out right now, because people are doing fantasy drafts, and this might make me lose him in some drafts. But my guy in fantasy this year, for anyone who cares, is Josh Jacobs. And the Packers are also my Super Bowl pick. And so part of it is that I think the Packers are going to be good. But also, like, it seems pretty obvious to me that they wanted Aaron Jones to be Lightning and then AJ Dillon to be Thunder. But then AJ Dillon wasn't as good as they wanted to be. And then Aaron Jones, like, wasn't able to, like, just, like, compensate for that lack of production that Dillon offered. And, like, then he would, like, anytime the Packers tried to use him in, like, a workhorse role, he would just kind of get nicked up. And so I feel like it's pretty obvious that the Packers like dumped a beloved player like Aaron Jones and signed someone like Josh Jacobs that he could be the workhorse and they could give him like the Thunder and the Lightning snaps. And Matt LaFleur has been talking him up as a pass catcher too. Like I feel like he's gonna end up like assuming good health, which You can say about any player again, but like I feel like assuming good health for Josh Jacobs, he's going to be top five in the league in touches on what I expect is going to be one of the best offenses in the league. But he's available in like the fourth or fifth round of fantasy drafts, which I just don't understand. So if you're looking for fantasy advice, that's my guy this year. If anyone is
Yeah.
about to.
That's a good take. I like that take.
Yeah, I'm
All
just
right.
trying to people out.
You've become much more well-rounded over the years, guys. I'll give you that. All right. Anything else before we boogie out?
No, I don't think so.
All
I'll
right.
see you at the football game.
Yeah. If you want to call it that. All
That.
right. Thank you all of you guys for listening to the Jaguars on SI podcast. I'm John Shipley, my co-host and friend, Gus Loeb. I know I say this all the time and I said it on Twitter, but follow everything Gus does, Big Cat Country, 1010, whatever. Gus, in my opinion, is one of the most talented people I've ever worked alongside. And I'm happy that this little thing called Jaguars football helped introduce me to somebody who sports a dog hat so well. So,
The people were asking for ketchup, so I had to make them
yeah,
happy.
where the hell is ketchup?
She's at her mom's house, but I got this hat for our anniversary, so I had to bring out ketchup.
You only get weekends, huh?
Every other weekend, my friend. But
Thank you guys again.
those are nice words, John. I really appreciate it, and I mean it doesn't. It's less satisfactory to just say the feeling is mutual, but it really is. I like. One of the best decisions I've made, not just in my career, but in my life, was sending you that DM to try to write for free at Jaguar Report. And so look at us now. Who would have thought?
Who would have thought? 112 episodes in. Thank you guys for listening. We'll be back next week. As always, don't forget, be bulk bold.
Bocce balls.
Fall into big savings, all in the Kroger app. Get packs of juicy red, green, black, or tri-color variety seedless grapes for $3.99 each. Then get tender boneless chuck roast or steaks for $4.99 a pound, all with your card and a digital coupon. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.